You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Israel was prepared for #OpIsrael, as it usually is, but #OpIsrael may play a larger HR role in the cyber underground than is often appreciated. Law firms do some security introspection in the Panama Papers aftermath, and Adware Variety moves from Windows to OS X. Adobe distributes its expected emergency patch for Flash Player. Tech industry observers see layoffs coming this year. We share some of the aphoristic advice for business we heard yesterday at the Cybersecurity Risk Management 360, and we wonder, what's the connection between the Mission Impossible theme music and hacktivist bad judgment? I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary and week in review for Friday, April 8th, 2016. Yesterday was Anonymous's annual #OpIsrael, the regular hacktivist action whose stated goal is to, quote, erase the Zionist devil from the internet, end quote, which of course it didn't succeed in doing. HackRead called #OpIsrael more hype than harm, and indeed the attacks, DDoS being the favorite tactic, didn't rise above the nuisance level. But as a famous space pirate once said, don't get cocky, kid. Recode puts the warning rather breathlessly. Anonymous's Hack Israel Day could impact the entire world. Behind the screamer headline is a serious point. Hacktivist actions, especially #OpIsrael, recruit effectively, and they can also serve as surprisingly effective training opportunities for aspiring hacktivists who eventually find their way into the cyber criminal market. That criminal market, according to a new study by Dell SecureWorks, remains immature, but it's growing in sophistication. With improved customer service, more sophisticated offerings, including some surprisingly comprehensive business dossiers, and an increasingly collaborative dark web ecosystem. Analysts continue to look into the Panama Papers hack, or at least look at it, since details of how the hack was accomplished remain sparse. They're offering much speculation, we stress speculation, about the potential role lax security could have played in exposing the data. Since some form of lax security somewhere contributing to a successful cyber attack is as close to a sure thing as we're likely to have in this life, the analysts are making a pretty safe bet. But details remain far too thin on the ground for any more interesting conclusions to be drawn. But law firms are taking the incident as a cautionary tale and show signs of doing some security introspection. Japan is taking advantage of the prominence of influential Chinese families to score public relations points against its regional rival. And speaking of Japan, this advanced country has a significantly different cybersecurity landscape than what Westerners may be accustomed to. William Saito is special advisor to the Prime Minister of Japan.
The startup scene in Japan is definitely different from other parts of the world. It's still definitely in its infancy. We don't have any major players yet. And I think a lot of the cybersecurity products that we use still tend to come from the United States, Israel, and other countries. So there's not much of a domestic presence quite yet. There is venture capitalist play here. There are a lot of government subsidies as well. The venture capital is not traditional venture capital that you see in places like the U.S., but there is a lot of activity in this area. So to give it credit, I think entrepreneurial activity has definitely increased in the last 18 months, 2 years.
In many Western nations, academic institutions are a common incubator for cybersecurity startups. But according to Saito, structural differences in Japan's educational system can present challenges.
The educational basis of Japan doesn't teach many of the students, for example, who come from the sciences, you know, managerial skills, really humanities-based accounting, marketing. And so you see a skills delta compared to other countries. And so that's kind of unfortunate, but there is tech that comes out of schools and academia. Whether they, you know, survive for X number of years, that's questionable.
Saito noted that when recommending cybersecurity products and services in Japan, it's important to recognize the cultural differences in how they prioritize risk.
Doesn't do well to try to sell it as a theft prevention thing, that a lot of companies still feel that their data, their intellectual property is not necessarily data bound yet. And so they feel some level of reluctance to protect something. And so I think cybersecurity is looked at from a different angle, and specifically things like integrity. So your data may not be worth much if you get it stolen, but if it was changed and, you know, schematics, wire transfers, contracts, if the data in there was surreptitiously changed by a competitor, what kind of impact will that have? And so I approach cybersecurity in Japan as definitely from a different angle, because theft is not necessarily articulatable as, say, other Western cultures.
He also suggested the Japanese market provides ample opportunities for companies looking to do business there.
Given the pressures that cybersecurity plays and that it's inherently a global issue, there are huge opportunities here to arbitrage and enter into a market that's just finally waking up and going, wow, this is a problem. And then on top of this, we have the Olympics coming in 4 years. And so this is definitely raising priority on cybersecurity and risk and security in general. So these things are definitely of interest, because you can't grow domestic, you know, innovations and companies overnight. And so I think there is that vacuum, and thus an opportunity for other countries and people.
Many consider Japan to be relatively insulated from cyber attacks, in part due to the language barrier, but recent attacks like Operation Dust Storm have highlighted the global nature of criminal cyber activities.
You know, the first generation would say that, yeah, Japan is an island and therefore we're inherently protected. And obviously that doesn't hold true in an ICT-connected world where internet tears down these borders. The second generation would say that, oh, hackers couldn't read Japanese. Really no longer true, because at its core, coding is coding. To make matters worse, in Japan, you have this rapidly aging society. And so this kind of society is really gullible to social hacking, other issues. And so you see that once you could get past the first layer on many of these things, you have a very rich populace that is really old and not very IT sophisticated. And so it's lucrative from a criminal standpoint if you can get into this. And again, you know, language is actually not that huge a hurdle. And so these areas I try to really emphasize with companies, in going that, you know, security through obfuscation is not really something that one should bet their company on.
That's William Saito, special advisor to the Prime Minister of Japan. In other hacking news, Cyber Reason reports finding a version of the Windows-based Purit adware affecting Macs. OS X Purit, as Cyber Reason calls the new strain, has so far mostly served up benign, if unwanted, ads, but the researchers warn that the adware has the potential to evolve into a significant attack vector. Right now, it infects Macs, creates a proxy server, and inserts advertising into web pages. But Cyber Reason has said the adware could easily be adapted to install a keylogger or other data theft and exfiltration tools. Samples of OS X Purit have been carried by bogus Adobe Flash updates and by other compromised files. Speaking of Adobe, they issued their promised emergency patch for Flash Player yesterday for Windows, Macintosh, Linux, and Chrome OS. The Magnitude Exploit Kit is actively exploiting Flash Player in the wild, so all users would be advised to update with the actual patch, not a bogus one, as soon as possible. Cerber ransomware is among the malware being distributed through this zero-day. Ars Technica looks at other ransomware incidents and glumly notes that this form of attack now offers criminals an easy payday. Sure, the victims don't always pay up. MedStar, for example, didn't. But the crime is still a very low-risk, high-reward proposition. Some $24 million are said to have been paid to ransomware purveyors by their victims in 2015, and most observers expect the figure to rise. U.S. federal authorities are now firmly on record as advising against paying cyber ransom. Security researcher David Longnecker reports that the Aris Surfboard Cable Modem, SB6141 model, is vulnerable to reboot attacks. A firmware patch is expected for the widely used modem, but it's not available yet.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Joining me is Jonathan Katz. He's a professor of computer science at the University of Maryland, and he's also director of the Maryland Cybersecurity Center, one of our academic and research partners. Jonathan, I was at a conference recently, and one of the presenters was talking about fully homomorphic encryption. I have to admit it was a little bit over my head, but I thought to myself, I know who I can ask about this, and also have him share it with our listeners. Fully homomorphic encryption, what is it?
Well, fully homomorphic encryption is really fascinating. It's been one of the holy grails, as it were, of cryptography since the 1970s. And for a long time, it was unclear whether any sort of fully homomorphic encryption scheme could even exist. And it wasn't until a breakthrough by Craig Gentry a few years ago that the cryptographic community even thought that such a thing would be possible.
Can you give us a description of how it works?
Well, at a high level, what fully homomorphic encryption allows you to do is to compute on encrypted data. So the basic idea is that I can take some data, I can encrypt it and send it to you. You can then perform a set of operations on the ciphertext that I send you and compute anything you like about the underlying encrypted data all the time without learning anything about what's been encrypted, and then send it back to me, at which point I can decrypt and recover the answer. So this basically, among other things, allows me to outsource computation to you and to get back a result without violating my privacy, the privacy of my data at all.
Are there any drawbacks?
Well, the problem is that right now the schemes we know of are inefficient to the point of being completely impractical. And the overhead that's introduced by fully homomorphic encryption is several orders of magnitude over the underlying computation itself. Nevertheless, researchers continue to work on it, and we can hope that within a few years or maybe a decade, we'll see systems that bring down this overhead to something much closer to practical.
All right, interesting stuff. Jonathan Katz, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
Industry news is mixed. On the good news side, KeyW lands a five-year, $152 million cybersecurity training contract with an unnamed U.S. customer, and the company moves closer to the long-prepared sale of its Hexis unit. Dell and EMC, as they prepare for their upcoming merger, are also divesting themselves of several units, including cyberplayer SecureWorks, whose initial public offering is expected later this month. On the less-than-good news side, several big tech companies are expected to go through a cycle of layoffs this year. While this is an IT story as opposed to a specifically cyber story, the sectors overlap enough to make layoff predictions interesting. Here's how Information Week sees it. VMware is expected to shed 10-15% of its employees, Symantec 15%, Yahoo 30%, EMC 15-20%, Cisco 20%, HP 30%, Microsoft 15%, Oracle 20%, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise 30%, and IBM 25%. Two observations are in order. First, these figures represent informed analyst conclusions, not firm corporate announcements, so the news may turn out to be much better, or alas, somewhat worse, than predicted. Second, should the layoffs occur, other companies should recognize that there's a lot of solid talent that's now back on the market and hire accordingly. After all, we hear there's a shortage of cybersecurity workers out there, right? We attended the Cybersecurity Risk Management 360 yesterday. You'll find a summary of the proceedings on our website, thecyberwire.com, but we wanted to share a few aphorisms the speakers left with us. On risk, quote, "People think it's never going to happen to them. Until an event occurs, we have a hard time getting their attention," end quote. On insurance, quote, "You buy property insurance, why not cyber insurance? A cyber attack is more likely than a fire," end quote. On the quantification of risk, quote, "It's important to communicate costs to small businesses, the cost of insurance and the cost of potential incidents," end quote. And finally, on change, quote, "The number one thing that drives change is customers. If you lose a customer because you don't have adequate security, you've lost money," end quote. And finally, a gentleman in Oklahoma City is looking at 10 years in prison for various forms of illicit online harassment of a security researcher who helped put one of his fellow hackers behind bars back in 2009. The two hackers, Handles Coax and Ghost Exodus, were members of what they styled the Electronic Tribulation Army, or ETA. That's electronic with a final K if you're keeping score at home. Mr. Coax sought to avenge Mr. Exodus's 2009 arrest with various online capers that include masked and behoodied videos of himself. But perhaps the real blame for Mr. Exodus's arrest should be laid at the 2009 video he posted to YouTube, featuring himself uploading malware to a former employer's system, accomplished to the tune of the Mission Impossible theme. So here's some free advice to the hacktivists underground. Pick your battles, and when you fight them, don't feel you need to go the full "Good morning, Mr. Phelps." After all, nothing on the internet self-destructs in 5 seconds.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope.
Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.